Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who has a vast collection of vintage DC and Marvel comic books, and ironically lives in Minnesota, where his favorite NBA team, the LA Lakers, originated, Dave Denniston.
Hello, my friends. This is Dave Denniston, your host, and welcome back to the latest episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. Well, welcome back to our monthly fireside chat with a physician to get to know their journey, their joys, and their struggles with finances and outside of finances. And my friends, this show is not always about actionable content, but it is a chance for you to see behind the curtains, to walk in another person's shoes, and to experience what they have gone through. Our next guest I'm really excited about, she had reached out to me, and I was just amazed by all of the fantastic things she has done. She has launched a prep kit called Bare Ease, which helps to numb skin before a waxing. She has been on Survivor. She has been on Shark Tank. And she has also written children's books, which she sent me a copy of, which is just a beautiful book I have here in front of me with three beautiful kids on the back of it. So with no further ado, please help me welcome Dr. Edna Ma. Welcome, Edna.
Thanks, Dave, for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, this is so fun, and we were talking beforehand. You have in common that you have seen and from time to time get to see one of our past podcast guests, Dr. Peter Kim.
Yes, I'm a huge fan of Peter Kim, too.
So we'll have to make sure to hook that up so we can look back on Peter's journey. So you're in L.A., I take it, L.A. area.
Exactly. We live in Southern California, and originally I'm from Denver, Colorado, and that's where I grew up and went to medical school and in college, actually.
Denver all the way out to California. That's a change. Change of culture.
It's a match. That's a dating service in the sky for residents. So take what you can get.
Well, tell me more about that, you know.
Oh, yes. Well, I ended up at UCLA for residency, and my husband, who is also a physician, came out to build his practice. And it was hard to, once he started growing roots, in terms of referral base, he has more of an office-based practice in otolaryngology. So once you start developing a referral base and a sort of a brand yourself when you're a physician, it's hard to just kind of uproot and start somewhere else. That's very different than the practice building you would have in anesthesia, radiology, or pathology. And so that's where he started. I started working in private practice in the hospital and in the Los Angeles area. And then we've just been here for since residency, which has been about 13 years now. It's crazy how time goes so quickly.
So growing up in Denver, were your folks in medicine, or how did you come into the medical world?
Exact opposite. You know, it's like, my parents were both Chinese immigrants, and they came over from southern China and when they were kind of in their 20s, and they didn't speak English very well, and they did the whole laboring job, Chinese restaurant, very typical immigrant story, working all day, morning, night, and finally they were able to save up enough money to start their own restaurant, and that's basically where I started learning about entrepreneurship, if you will. I remember as early as the sixth grade, I would take the bus from, like, I think it's in the bad part of Denver, all the way up to my parents' Chinese restaurant, and in the sixth grade, I was making change, answering the telephone, and then just working every position at the restaurant until I went to medical school. And that was just kind of a lifelong dream of mine, to become a physician. Actually, I wanted to be a vet, but I'm very allergic to cats and dogs and horses. So it turned out that, I guess, medicine, I'm not allergic to people as much as I am to cats and dogs.
But that's some how people.
Exactly. So that's how I ended up with ending up in medicine. So, and then ending up in California by the match system.
Isn't that something? Wow. Well, I have to imagine that growing up in that situation, work ethic was everything, right, that your parents provided for you, gave you an opportunity. Was there a moment where you just knew that medicine? Was it obviously you had a love for animals, but your body was telling you otherwise? You know, what was that? Do you remember a moment, a particular decision point? It was like, oh yeah, this is it. This is what I want to do.
So I don't know if it was just so much a moment, and you know, you frame it like, oh, they gave you this opportunity, and I think that's a very good kind of perspective on that. When you're like slogging away at the restaurant until 9 p.m. on every single school day, and then on Saturdays, and sometimes on Sundays as well, you don't think of this necessarily as an opportunity. It's like, this is just your reality. You just gotta, you know, this is reality. You just gotta do it. And was there really a moment that I said, this is what I want to do? But I don't think so. But I think that I just got schlepped everywhere as a child interpreter. I remember going to, as an interpreter, I was like 8 or 9 years old. I was speaking, I was like the only one of the few people who spoke Cantonese growing up in Denver and speaking English. And I was taken as an escort with a distant relative to go to a primary care visit or gynecology visit, and they asked me, when was your age of your first period? And I didn't know what that was. And then the doctors didn't know how to explain it to me, and I'm trying to explain in my 8-year-old Chinese. And I think that to me was sort of the pivot point, like, hey, you know, I can speak directly to Chinese, people who speak Chinese or a different language or whatever. So I just realized how important language is in very intimate settings, like seeing your physician. You don't want an 8-year-old child explaining your most intimate, personal things with a child. And I think if I had to say one moment, I would probably say that was it.
I could totally see that. That's amazing. What a story. So as you're growing up in your household with your incredibly hardworking parents who are living the American dream, working their tails off, I remember back with conversation with Bo Liu, where he's from China, and he talked about kind of the difference between a Chinese grandma versus an American grandma. That the Chinese grandma, that she wants to save every single penny. You know, they don't buy a house until they're late because they have to buy it in cash. You know, there's a huge incentive on cash. Whereas, you know, Americans quite often, you know, leverage and they borrow. What was that like for you growing up? What was the mentality around money?
Okay, so I would say this. That's very true. I feel like the Chinese have a very, very long history of their government debasing their currency multiple. And so they see that. They have living memories of that. So, and I think that most Americans these days, as is evident in our most recent financial crisis, you can see this. There's more trust in the government and the fiat currency that we have. But growing up in the house, it was, again, just like seeing – I was the one who wrote the checks. I got to see how much the mortgages cost. I had to, there was a sheet of paper that my mom would have. Okay, the number one had the Arabic number one, and then it had the hash, and it would say O-N-E. And then eventually I got old enough where I could just write it out. She said the bill was this much, and I would, cash flow management was sort of a very early lesson just in the Ma household.
And that was that because they really needed you to do that? Because
they just didn't. When they first came over, they really didn't. I was born in the States. So it's like I was held back in preschool because I didn't speak English going into school. And they eventually, when you're just trying to make ends meet, you're not like, okay, I'm going to go to the free language class at the local community college. You know, you're not like that kind of situation. You're just like busting your tail just to make enough money to pay the rent. And so I got to see kind of firsthand like that kind of the management of household finances. So I was at the front of it. I was writing the checks. If it wasn't me, it was like another relation in the community.
Wow. Well, what a great lesson. And I think as we get further in your journey, I'm going to have to ask you what's happening with your family and how you think about that. So we'll get to that eventually. So when you think about money, you think about influences on you, what would you say, Edna, just in a few sentences, you know, is some of the biggest influences that's impacted you as you're growing up and then now going into, at this stage of your life, going into residency?
Of course. So as growing up, it was telling my parents, And yeah. as I graduated residency, I would say the biggest influence is Robert Kiyosaki.
Mm.
I know that you're familiar with him because you've mentioned him in your podcast. But when I was an intern, we had a financial education group come into our internship and try to sell us life insurance, and I needed that.
The opposite of life support. It's life sucking.
It's like, and then they were selling this whole life insurance, you know, variable life policy, and all these things I just did not understand, and the nuances of the differences. So I just started reading these books. I started reading everything from, like, Susie Orman and then, like, David Bach, and then everything that I could find that had anything, even Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, everything that I could find. And the book that really kind of clicked in my head is the Robert Kiyosaki book, in terms of that, the little quadrants that he draws and cash flow, liability versus asset, all that stuff. It's like, okay, this is kind of what my parents do, and this is what he's saying. And it's like, and it just made sense. And then I started going to his seminars, and then it even made more sense. And I started Edward Griffin and all those guys that I started following, and these global economists. That's who I am following now. Jim Rogers, those guys.
Which many of them, which I'm not familiar with all of the names, but it seems to me that there's a very entrepreneurial spirit behind everything that Robert has and a lot of his stuff, as well as some of these other folks. So help me understand that you've gone through medical school at this point. Were your folks able to help out? I mean, just with the fact that, you know, they were kind of scraping by at times, or what was it like for you, you know, when you come out of undergrad, come out of medical school, did you have a lot of debt? You know, what has that been like?
Okay, yes. Okay, so at this, my parents, I think, fast forward, like, it was 20 years, they managed to save up enough money. They basically, they didn't know they were doing it, but the whole Robert Kiyosaki thing. Four greenhouses, one red hotel, for a 1031 exchange, right? So they were doing that, and I didn't know any of this. I just know that they had these apartments that I was managing and helping them manage through medical school, and I was just so angry. And these are just very, like, I have more important things to do. I need to study for this exam on whatever PSA and prostate-specific antigens or whatever, and I'm here just trying to collect, you know, it was, you don't realize at the time that the lessons are, you know, the lessons that you're learning. And so after I graduated from medical school, I took loans out. At that time, loans were very, very inexpensive. I think the interest rates was maybe 2%.
Yep.
And that when I graduated, I was about $100,000 worth of debt, and that works out to be over 30 years, something like a little bit over $400 a month. And I went to a state school, and I think that made a big difference.
Yep.
My husband, who did not go to a state school, he went to a private school. And I think his is almost triple mine when he graduated. So basically, that prices you out of primary care specialties.
Yes.
Like you cannot, okay, being a pediatrician is not going to be a realistic plan for you.
No.
So so he said that he felt that pressure coming out of medical school that you would have to become something more subspecialized than just straight primary care.
So he did ENT. When did the two of you meet? You know, when did that happen in your journey?
Okay, so let the record show that I've never been a medical student on his service under his supervision. I was a fourth year or third year medical student on anesthesia, and he was the R2 in ENT, and I was just putting an IV on his pre-op patient. I should try to find that patient and thank him for introducing us.
That's fun. Okay. So remind me at this time, so he was a practicing physician at this time?
He was a resident when I met him, and then and I was a third year medical student. And then we got married when we were when I was an intern, and he was, I think, an R4 at that point.
And this always fascinates me, and I know for me and my wife, you know, this, we come from two different backgrounds, and there's a beauty in that. You know, my wife has so many amazing skill sets that I don't have, and vice versa. Did you find for yourself that he was kind of an opposite, or was this, did you guys have a similar mindset about money? You know, what was that like with with a two-physician household that at the time you guys were relatively broke, but you know that you were about to be coming into money before too long.
Yeah, I appreciate your open mindset, because a lot of people are like, oh, she doesn't understand where I'm coming from. She's coming from a different background. But having open mindset is like the biggest thing, because he actually comes from a very similar background. His family's from the northern part of China and then immigrated to Taiwan. So we are both ethnically Chinese, but his parents were NASA scientists. And so they came from more of an educated class. And my father-in-law tells me that when he first got a job at NASA, they made him translate a book that was already originally published in English and then translated to Chinese. And then he had to translate that book from Chinese to English to see if he had adequate English skills to take this job at NASA. So his parents come from a more educated class, but the work ethic is there because as a side hobby, is his parents had a Chinese restaurant in Williamsburg, Virginia. After their day job of being at NASA all day, they would go work their restaurant. And so my husband also, at a very young age, had a lot of customer service jobs. And I would say that medicine is a customer service-based industry, just in a slightly different costume, if you will, on a superficial level. So it is very much customer-based.
Well, and if you go back 30, 40 years ago, right? I mean, you or even longer, right? You had doctors visiting patients at their home, and it was very much like many other service-based businesses. Obviously, there's been some change in more hospital systems. I still think it's coming back to that. But anyhow, another subject for another day.
Well, let's take a moment for a quick commercial break. Well, my friends, if you are sitting here confused by all these tax changes, wondering how the heck does this impact me? I mentioned in January, the beginning of this year, that I am going to make available to you my calculator showing all the different scenarios laid out on how this whole thing works. So for this month and the next one, if you text all one word, less taxes, LESSTAXES, all one word, less taxes, to 44222, you can grab that calculator right now. Go ahead and text less taxes, all one word, LESSTAXES, to 44222. And if you're interested in wanting to get the tax reduction prescription, the newest version of it, definitely text there as well, because that will give you early access to the next version of the tax reduction prescription. Again, text less taxes, all one word, LESSTAXES, to 44222. And now, back to the show.
I would love to know, Edna, you know, that the two of you have come together. You're doing life together now at this point. He graduates from residency, and then the two of you move to L.A. at some point. And I mentioned in the introduction that you got into entrepreneurship. So at what point did you become an entrepreneur? Help me understand that part of your journey, that you started your own multiple streams of income at some point.
Yes. Yeah. So I would say that most physicians at their heart, they're problem solvers. So my girlfriend was one day was like, oh, you need to go get this Brazilian wax. I'm like, okay, I'm a married lady, but sure, I'm willing to try it everything at least once, right? So I'm like, oh my God, this is like so crazy painful. And so I'm like, why wouldn't we just numb the skin up? Like we numb the skin up before an IV on a child. We just put this Emla, which is some local anesthetic, lidocaine and prilocaine on the skin, keep it covered for half an hour, 45 minutes, and come back and do the IV. Why can't we just do the same thing in the bikini area or the eyebrow area, wherever you want to wax? So then we did some research online. I noticed that there was no real OTC products for that. I said, there's no reason why I can't do that. And so just trying to solve a problem. And I thought, okay, there's no physician-based products. And I'm like, this is a very natural extension, and try to create some, you know, I guess you'd say, a diversification of my assets or income, if you will, or cash flow. So that's how I decided to do it. I just started, just extrapolated a concept that was in the the operating room or in the perioperative area and then just made it into a house, like a household product.
So at what point was this?
Okay, this is immediately right after residency. So at that point, I was sort of, it's very expensive. If anybody's worried about, oh, I don't want to share this idea because somebody's going to steal it, it takes a tremendous amount of resources, not just time and money, but just to give you an idea, I went to a toy manufacturer to pitch the idea. And I figured, and there was just a bunch of recommendations. I went to this manufacturer down in Orange County, and I said, this is kind of my idea. He thought that there was merit in it and kind of introduced me to the these manufacturers in China eventually. But just to build a prototype, it was $10,000 before they would even take me.
Wow. So how did you, you're a new attending, and you're not the bottom of the totem pole anymore of being a resident or medical student, but you're certainly not at the top of the totem pole either. So help me understand first, time-wise, how did you find the time and energy to do this?
Okay, so I'm an anesthesiologist, and usually our cases start at 7 a.m., but you know what? The East Coast is already open at that time. So what I would do is just, like, wake up an hour early to make the phone calls on the East Coast. Like, sometimes a lot of some operations, manufacturers, I needed some tube manufacturing, and the FDA labeling compliance people, they're all on the East Coast. So I would just wake up early and do that. And every once in a while between surgeries, like, there'd be a delay, or you're waiting for your patient to come down from the ICU or whatever, you're just like, okay, I'm going to take these 10 minutes that I have, your surgeon's delayed, and make a phone call, shoot off an email. And when you're on covering labor and delivery, there's not every minute of the day you're in the operating room. So I just took every minute to make a phone call, make a contact, and take those opportunities to share with certain people your idea and product and whatever project you're working on. Because I feel part of it is like you share your ideas with other people, and other people will hold you accountable. They'll ask you, hey, what's happening with such and such that you're doing? And
right.
Or they share ideas that are very useful for you. They can also be helpful to you. And I think it's also just keeps you with an open mind.
Yeah, for sure. So what about the financial side of it? You know, here your husband has $300,000 in student debt. You have $100,000 in student debt. How did you think about getting $10,000 just for the prototype? So let's throw out the whole time aspect, right? You know, how did you financially think about that? You know, because obviously that $10,000 could have gone towards paying down student debt. Your husband being an ENT, you being an anesthesiologist, obviously you're making great money at this particular point, but you're just there, right? You're just starting,
right.
And you have
We're
this mountain
starting.
Of debt.
We want to be responsible human beings as well. I would say we didn't have children at the time. They're very expensive for anybody who knows and for anybody who's thinking about that. And we had the sort of freedom of flexibility of that. And so I feel like at this point, we're kind of into the trenches of the Robert Kiyosaki and not just and it's looking at things in terms of, okay, let's just say inflation is about 6%. Let's just say that's the inflation. I would say that's very reasonable. We have our interest fixed at 30 years for 2% or something like that for when we graduated. That is basically free money, especially if you're just looking at you just pay it down with cheaper dollars in the future. That's fixed. And I thought that that was very nominal. So for us, it wasn't a psychological burden to have this debt on that, and I think people kind of have different emotions towards debt. And for us, it's just debt. It's not good or bad. You just have to be indifferent to it. And if you can find other ways of cash flow, I think about things more like in terms of sort of the cash flow rather than the actual nominal amount that's sitting on a statement.
Now,
I don't try to get too weighed down by that.
I totally get it. Well, and at 2% interest, right? I mean, that's not a whole lot.
Exactly.
But today, right, if you look at the residents and newly attending physicians, a lot of them have interest rate at 6.8%.
Yes.
If that were you today, do you think you'd think of it differently?
I personally, I don't think so, because I feel like I feel like I look at, it depends on my kind of other sources of income and stuff, but I would say that I have talking to my colleagues, I don't have that emotional or financial burden that comes with debt. So it doesn't bother me that much because I know that we have other, maybe this is just the reflection of the other kind of cash flow projects that we have going on, that it doesn't, and I look at it at cash flow rather than the actual number hovering over my household month after month. It doesn't bother me.
Interesting.
I'm sorry. It's opposite of a lot of what people feel, but I would say that if you're concerned about your money and you kind of, I feel like I have a very good sense of like kind of finances and global finances. I feel like it's not like we were born into money. Like I had said, we're just still hustling out there, but I feel like we manage our cash flow quite well. So I'm not emotionally burdened by that.
Well, I think part of it too is how you're feeling about your family and things like that. I know there are many women who, bless their heart, want to be with their children and don't want to have to work or work half time. And obviously it is a burden in the sense that you do have to produce a certain amount of revenue, right, in order to service the debt.
So I agree.
So in your situation, you have this amazing work ethic taught to you by your parents, you know, from the earliest age, whether you're writing checks or helping customers at the restaurant, and your husband too, it sounds like, went through something similar. So let me fast forward. We just have a few minutes left in our conversation. I'm just enjoying learning about this so much. So you have this prototype, and at some point, do you start selling at retail? You have some sort of retail deal? You know, what happens to break through?
So basically I was hustling. My plan was to, and I didn't actually totally answer your question, I think. I also had I don't know if it was, you call it fear of missing out or something, but I'm like, this concept of having this product is so straightforward, it hasn't already been done yet. If I don't do it, then somebody else will, and I would have that regret. That regret of not taking action on my part was probably the primary reason. Like, okay, is it $10,000 or whatever question mark number, that, because it's always not just a fixed amount for a project like this. It's an unresolved ending, if you will. Mm-hmm. So I didn't like that feeling of like, oh, okay, that could have been my idea. That was my idea. Now it's sitting on every whatever blanket or snuggie out there, you know, blanket with sleeves. Like, you know, everybody has that kind of idea, but they didn't take action. I didn't want that to be me. And and so I decided to take some. So my plan was originally to kind of, on my post-call days off, which I did, would go to regional beauty stores and say, hey, this is my product. And it was such a process trying to get into these retail stores. And it was not very productive use of my time. So at that point, I had my son, and I'm like, okay, we're going to do sort of actually, I didn't have my son at this point. At this point, I was, I need to get on Shark Tank. And so I'm like, I'm going to contact everybody I know who has connected with anybody who's in entertainment. Just going to send out there. I need to go to Shark Tank. I need to have this kind of, because I can't manage my career as an anesthesiologist and help manage this growing brand. So somebody's like, oh, I don't know anything about Shark Tank, but there's Survivor casting going on. And literally that I can still remember, it was like Cinco de Mayo of 2011. I'm like, okay, I will go. I'm going to go there because I know it's the same production team as Shark Tank and Survivor. I show up and they're like, okay, I'm here for the Survivor casting. And then they keep moving me forward into the process. I'm like, my plan is to get in front of the executive producer, who is Mark Burnett, and I'm going to tell them about my product. I'm going to tell them what they want to hear, which is I want to be contestant on Survivor. But when I get in front of the right people, I'm going to tell them I'm actually here for a Shark Tank. That was my plan. And so I did that. I'm like in front of the whole CBS crew, it was like a room of 20 people and cameras on me. And Jeff Probst, and I didn't know who Jeff Probst was at the time. He's the guy who's like, Survivor's ready. He wears a baseball cap and a blue Columbia shirt every single episode. He's been doing the show for like 10, 15 years now. And I didn't even know who that guy was. I didn't know anything about Survivor, except I maybe saw one or two seasons of it. And that was ages ago when Survivor was really popular.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm not actually here for Survivor, and I'm here in front of all these people. I said, I really would like to be on love to be on Shark Tank. That's what I'm here for. I've got this product. They're like, you're at the wrong audition. I said, I know, but I just figured you'd give me a chance. Since I'm already here, you could just hear. And these people are just, this is CBS, right? And I didn't know at the time, but Shark Tank is ABC, and that's like a different network. Everything's different. And so actually Mark Burnett pulled me out of casting and said, if you want money for your business, I'm giving you a chance, 1 in 18 chance of winning $1 million. 8 weeks of your time. Take it or leave it. You have 3 hours to make your decision.
Wow.
And I was like, I can't believe this is happening. And I called my husband at his office. I said, Mark Burnett just came up to me and recount the conversation. I said, I have to make a decision before I leave CBS. And he's like, okay. I'm like, okay, 1 in 18 chance. I have the fear of missing out or whatever condition that I have. And so I said, oh, let's do it. I'll just do it. And so I'm like totally deconditioned. I'm not like very athletic. I'm maybe 5'3" and 110 pounds. And I'm on the call schedule for the operating room at the hospital and stuff. I'm like, at this point, I'm just like mad crazy trying to get off the call schedule for the next and the work schedule for the next 8 weeks. And then like literally two weeks later, I was on a plane to Samoa.
So how did that? I'm curious about the talking with your employer. It's like, oh hey, by the way, I got casted on Survivor. Can you hold my spot for me? You know what was that conversation like?
Okay, that conversation really didn't happen. So I was an independent. CBS makes you say a $5 million non-disclosure for anybody that you tell. And so it's a package. Literally, the NDA is like a ream of paper. And so I told the group that I was working with, and I was an independent contractor at the time, and we are free to date other people. I said, I need to take a personal leave of absence for 8 weeks. They're like, okay. Oh. And that was it. I went off, and I came back, and I think it just startled everybody. I think it was like nobody expected it.
Leave
I'm like
absence.
This. Yes, I took a personal leave of absence.
They just said okay. That was it.
They said, I think I had two associates call me and say, hope everything is okay. Is everything okay between you and your husband? I'm like, yes, it is. Thank you for calling me. And that was it.
Oh my gosh.
And I came back, and it was like, and the cast was revealed, and it was, you know, you quickly get to see, like, who was supportive and who was not supportive of my adventures. So, and that's fine. You can't make everybody happy. And I feel like everything, you know, at the time you don't feel like it's an opportunity, but fast forward 5 years, you feel like, okay, I learned a lot from that. That was a very good lesson. And I feel like maybe that was a really good good lesson for me at the time I did want children in my life. And I feel like working in a hospital and taking call two times a week is not really conducive with being a very consistent, present mother. So I think that was a good thing for me.
Hmm. Well, I think we'll just have to come back another day, and we'll have to go through the rest of your journey and what happened with the prototype after you get back from this journey with Survivor. So we're going to wrap up the conversation for today and then leave everyone hanging on what happened next.
Okay, sounds good.
But I would love to know, as the way you're looking at debt is different than the way a lot of other people look at debt. Mm-hmm. So I would love to know, how are you tracking your progress to financial freedom? You know, what does that look like for you? How are you defining financial freedom?
Okay, so I would say that financial freedom for me would involve the amount of cash flow in. Does that cover my cash flow out and my liabilities out? And very similar to what my associate Dr. Kim follows too. And I think that most people would do that too. Do I have enough quote unquote passive income? Because no income is ever passive. even when you're receiving rents from properties or sales from my numbing kit, that's never passive because you have to manage the warehouse. You have to manage the property management. So that is that's a misnomer for that. So I would say in general, would you have enough income from whatever direction it's coming from? Do you have enough income, either from earned income or passive income, real estate income, to cover your monthly cash flow out, your obligations?
And so for your situation with not being concerned about the student debt, and you know, is there a point where you see yourself stepping away from being an anesthesiologist? We don't need a time frame, but do you see that happening at some point? You know, that you're happy with your other residual income type ventures, that and you have enough income coming in from them that you can say, you know what, I don't need to be in medicine. Or do you just love medicine so much that no matter what happens, it's like, you know what, I love my life. You know, I don't see myself changing at this particular time, you know, anytime real soon. How do you think about that?
I really like where I am in my career in terms of the anesthesia practice that I have, and where I have the choice right now to choose who I work with when I work, and I enjoy when I am there. And I would kind of like to echo some, again, what Dr. Kim had said. It's like, you know, when he had reached his financial freedom, going into the hospital felt like a privilege. He didn't have to do it. And I wouldn't say I'm exactly, like, I wouldn't necessarily frame it like that, but I enjoy helping people out in the operating room. I went to school for ages and ages and ages and trained to do this. And I actually enjoy working with the staff and working with the patients. And I have a lot of fun doing it. And so I don't think I could step away right now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I think that I'm a kind of a happy equilibrium.
That's great. I love it. That's a powerful position to be in. You know, when you have the ability that you could, that you have freedom in that, and that is a great thing. Now, Edna, I think we have to leave everyone hanging with what happens next, and we'll come back and revisit it. But if people want to check out, you know, the different things that you have going on, where can they do that?
Oh, right now I think you could just go to EdnaMaw.com, and I will tell you that we're still working on a little bit of kinks there. So that's just a non-creative website, EdnaMaw.com.
So EdnaMaw.com.
Yes, exactly.
Perfect, perfect. And if you could give any advice to the physicians that are listening, maybe a piece of business advice or something, a lesson that you feel has really led you to the place that you're at right now, what is something that you could pass on, just one lesson, to us?
That's a hard question for me to answer because I feel like there's so many things. I feel like if you have an idea and or a dream, there's no reason why you can't do it and just would go for it. It's not very unique. Nike has used it. Just do it. But I feel like that is applicable for physicians too.
So as we have quite a few physicians that are in clinical medicine, and maybe they're not feeling the love for it as much as they used to, sounds like your advice would be pursue other things. Try it out. See what happens.
And just overcome that fear a little bit. I feel like a lot of people, especially now I've done all these things, I can tell people are hesitant to take action because of this fear. And I would say that you have really nothing to worry about because the worst thing you could do is just do medicine. And if you have, and that's a privilege. Do medicine is a privilege. And if it's this other project, you can pursue it on the side. There's no reason for you to quit medicine altogether to pursue it. You can take it in bite sizes.
Well, that's what you've done. I mean, what a great example that you've said of that. Well, Edna, thank you so much for coming on. Do you have any closing thoughts for us?
Thank you so much for having me as a guest. I've been listening to you for a very long time, and it's a real honor to be talking to you.
What a great way to pump up the host. See, now we have to have her have back. She's dressed me up with all kinds of great information. All right, my friends. Well, there you have it. You can find out more about Edna. She not only has she done all this other stuff, she has children's books. So check out her website, EdnaMaw.com. And, of course, this wraps up the episode for today. I just want to encourage you, we always love talking with physicians like Edna. So if you have something to share, you have a success story, maybe you have a failure story that we can all learn from, I would love to hear from you, Dave at Dr. freedompodcast.com or on my website, www.drfreedompodcast.com. For the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, this is Dave Denniston. And remember, my friends, remember to slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle.
Well, there was the show. Hope you loved it. And of course, we want to make sure to remember that right now is the time. If you are confused about this tax stuff, you want the latest copy of the tax reduction prescription and that calculator I was talking about in January, there's no better time to grab that than right now. Text less taxes, LESSTAXES, to 44222. Again, that's all one word, less taxes, LESSTAXES. Thank you again so much for listening. Blessings to you. Have a good one.